Happy Halloween time! I'm Roz Hernandez. I'm a comedian and the host of the paranormal comedy podcast, Ghosted by Roz Hernandez, produced by Starburns Audio. On my podcast, I talk to famous people, comedians, experts, and listeners about all things paranormal. We're talking Ouija boards, poltergeists, aliens, psychics, demons, Bigfoots, and of course, ghosts. My podcast is weekly all year long, and I've got over 3 years of episodes currently available for all your spooky needs. Recent guests include Patton Oswalt.
But it felt like the minute I walked away from the monitors and I couldn't see anything, that's when the ghost started moving around.
Naomi Ekperigin.
A ghost isn't like somebody, it's not like a return. It's like somebody who was like, I don't feel like leaving.
And Chris Colfer.
Whatever it was slowly just disappeared. And that's when I knew, oh, that was not a person.
Subscribe to Ghosted by Roz Hernandez on Apple Podcasts and everywhere you get podcasts.
Crab Feast. You know what it's all about.
This is the Crab Feast. I'm yelling, fuck that. You ain't gotta ask me, cause you could trust that. Every Tuesday, you already knew though. Orion Sickler, soccer star, Juco. Above ground, cool goes better than most. Jay Larson, self-diagnosed. Go down low this week, last week. Here we go again. Fuck the Crab Feast.
It's the joint.
Welcome back to the Crab Feast, y'all.
Another Tuesday.
Woo!
Another Crab Feast for that ass. Good to touch or pitch, Jay Larson.
Touch is being pitched, baby.
There was touches being pitched and pitches being touched.
We had a good turnout home run derby.
We're going to talk about it. Get your promos out of the way. I can't believe what just happened.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jay Larson here, jaylarsoncomedy.com, Jay Larson Comedy across all social media. I am officially, this Friday, tickets will be on sale for the What Do We Learn tour, a crowd work experience. Some of the first off the bat, Cleveland on October 3rd, Detroit October 4th, Chicago October 5th, Portland on the 10th, Seattle on the 11th, Wenatchee on the 12th, 13th, TBD, 14th in Oakland. And then more dates to come, Boston, D.C., a bunch of different places, Atlanta. I'm excited to come see all you guys. So this Friday, all dates will be available via my website, jaylarsoncomedy.com. And I'll be in Colorado the 20th, 21st, and 22nd of September in some great spots as well. Those will be up on my website this week as well. Everything else in town and around. So come out to anything if you're in L.A. Sickle Cell?
Ryan Sickler on Instagram, Ryan Sickler on all social media. I want to say, I want to bring it up right now because I'm promoting a show. It's a little ways from now, but I want to drop it now because it's a Baltimore show. It's Saturday, November 17th. Going to be doing it at the Famous, at Jimmy's Famous Seafood Restaurant. Josh Adam Myers is going to join me. He's coming home to see his mom for Thanksgiving, so he's going to be a guest on the show. But that is Saturday, November 17th. I'll put links up everywhere. I want to see you Baltimore fans come out and Maryland fans. I also considering doing a show an evening with a couple of guests from the crowd. So I know there's some diehard Baltimore fans. You guys want to send me a little blip of your story, email me at the Crab Feast email, crabfeastpodcast@gmail.com. And maybe we can have some fun. Speaking of fun, Jay Larson Comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Crab Feast, first and probably last annual home run derby. Maybe not last.
Someone was like, you guys should open that up next time to like everyone, all things comedy.
I think that would be a really good idea.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Because I'd like to know where I place among more people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Am I 5? Am I 10?
Mm-hmm. We should find out. I mean, now it's out there, you know?
Huh?
Now it's out there. Then people are going to be like, oh, you got to do it. You got to do it. What do you think? You think Nick Youssef's going to come in there and jack 1-290?
I'll tell you what. Put that good denim on and rip 1-297, dude.
It's got that denim.
Fresh from the freezer.
I'd say we had like 60 people there.
Yeah. I mean, maybe more. Let's just talk about how much fun this was. This
seven sign
fucking home run derby was on the Court McCown episode, almost a year to the date. And he even joked and said August 2018. And his prediction was damn accurate. Mm-hmm. He came and supported out there shagging balls.
I think people had more fun just out there shagging balls than anything.
And then we just, from a fucking stupid bet on a podcast, we had a fucking home run.
Like 60 people with signs. We had an ice cream truck.
Maybe more. It might have really been more.
That 13 camera shoot, dude.
13 camera
13
shoot.
13 cameras there.
For all things comedy, who did an amazing job. Mike Bernalino and his crew
job.
And Brenton Biddlecombe. All you guys did a fucking great, great job at all things comedy. And, yeah, we had soft serve ice cream. We had a mariachi band. I had a 5-piece mariachi band show up because we didn't have any electricity. We probably could have thought it out, maybe got a little Bluetooth speaker and had some walk-up music and stuff like that. But I wanted some excitement during atmosphere music during it. We are in Southern California. It's a little bit of flavor. I'm laying next to Stella while she's sleeping, yelping this guy. I didn't even know you could Yelp message somebody. I hit these dudes up at like 12:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, can you guys just play for the hour? And I go, hey, can you play the national anthem? And he wrote back, we don't know it. We'd have to learn it. We'd have to charge you for that. And I was like, these guys are authentic right here, right? And they did not know the United States
That's
national
classic.
Anthem. So they came out. And also I knew, like, if I was at a park with Stella, and I know you'd be the same way, and we heard a mariachi band, we'd be like, we're going to go over and fucking see what that is. And we had, I don't know if you noticed on the other side of the dugout, there was a group of people that had come over from the playground area, and we had a nice fucking group of people out there watching.
It was great.
It really was great.
Brody Stevens, first pitch.
Yeah.
You know it. He did a great job.
He did. DVK pitching to me did a great job. The Sklar brothers were fantastic over there.
Sklar's crushed it, dude. I cannot Always. Wait. So we had All Things Comedy come out and film the whole thing, and they're going to piece the whole thing together as if it was a home run contest on ESPN. And anytime I was sitting next to the Sklars or just out of earshot, you just heard fucking zinger after zinger after zinger.
At one point, you're
over there, and they go, man, Sickle's taking more pitches than Comedy Central.
Like, no, that's the
they kept. It was hilarious.
I was thinking so good, dude. I would hear them say how we gained weight and none of it's muscle and all this shit. Like, I could hear them from the batter's box and I'd be laughing at them over there. Like, these fucking guys.
Oh, they're hilarious, dude.
It was so good. And who else?
We had both Josh Adam Myers there.
And Sandy Danto. Both Josh Adam Myerses were there doing sideline commentary, is what he calls it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were great. What else do we have we want to talk about here? I want to say definitely thank you to everybody we just mentioned, obviously.
Jeremiah Watkins.
Thank you. He might
help me out in the second round, big time.
Gave you that steroid ice cream cone.
That steroid ice cream cone, which turned me around. That's what turned me around, baby.
Dan Godfrey came all the way up from Irvine. You know, Dan Godfrey, Sup Pac-Man. He came all the way up with his Sup Pac-Man shirt on.
He had 3 Orioles gear on. Hat, shirt, undershirt.
He really did. We're the worst team in
Ryan.
He showed up. He repped hard. I texted him and thanked him today for it. I want to say thank you to Tops for supporting me and having fun with it. Jeremy Fullerton over there and my guy Kevin Riggin, who all through this was the guy that was editing my hitting sessions, Jay.
That's great.
So I wanted to thank him. And so Jay Larson Comedy wins the distance bet. You earned my absolute respect. You hit
it. I can't believe I wouldn't have had it before.
Yeah, I didn't think you'd hit it more than 300-ish. 322 is a good shot.
I jacked it 1.3 in a row.
Over what? Well,
over the fence.
Let's dial it back on the jacks. The jack was 355. Over that fence, you did hit three in
a
row.
Yeah, jacked him.
Over
Sklar's
that fence.
Got up after him, like, dude, I took swings. Like, there's not even close.
That was good.
And the wind was blowing in.
I don't know.
100% the wind was blowing. Ask Court McCown. Ask more. Court even came up to me right before because he's a golfer and I'm a golfer. He's like, he goes, you got a quarter wind coming in.
The wind's blowing. Get the fuck out of here with the winds blowing in. With that
I hit
shit.
It. I hit it.
It didn't stop anything.
Of course it did.
Oh, come on. There was no fucking terrible wind blowing.
Listen, okay? Anyone who's ever played a sport that wind becomes a factor, mm-hmm. you say, oh, yeah, the wind's blowing in. When you pick your field direction, I'm not saying that's what prohibited me from hitting 355.
I'm saying it's a factor.
Just like when guys pick what side of the team they're going to defend in football, they're like, well, which way is the wind going to be going in the second half? Because of the wind. That's a factor. And the wind was blowing in that day. And that's what it does at that field. Even Brody goes, wind's coming from Marina Del Rey.
That's
you go to North Venice Little League, it blows out.
Those are your two sources, Brody and Court McCown.
Court McCown, like, you know what Court McCown used to do in the PGA when he would caddy for Jesper Parnevik?
Throw grass up and see which way it blew.
Nope.
No.
Jason Day would come over and go, why don't you light a cigarette? Because wherever the smoke went, they knew where the wind was going. So if it was subtle and you wouldn't know what was going
on. Is that why he was smoking out in the outfield?
Yeah, because I wanted to get a read on the wind. I didn't need to because you just dropped the grass and you'd see it.
Wind is a factor. That wind was a light breeze.
Hey, man.
That's all I'm saying.
Either way, I'm saying
you did great.
Everything's a factor.
322 is very impressive.
Yeah. I was proud.
You should be proud. I know you were happy with that.
I mean, my body was sore as fuck.
See, I feel good. I took an Epsom salt bath the night before, and I stretched in it for like an hour, for real.
I did three shows, son, night before.
Then I got out, and I stretched some more, and then I got up in the morning that day and stretched, and then I came to the field and stretched, and I was popping a lot of Tylenol all throughout that time, and I feel good today.
That's good. I'm sore as fuck.
What hurts?
My back, my hips, my hamstring on my right leg, my plant leg.
When I was hitting with DVK, I had, you know, it was the first time live. I was pulling these muscles in my neck and shit. I'm like,
muscles you don't even know.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, we're 40-year-old men.
I'm happy with what I did. I got my, I'm using my round trip airfare. I'm going to go back home and see family at some point. That's my W. You got a big ass trophy that's bigger than your kids.
Uh-huh. I'm going to put that trophy in here. Reed was stoked about it. He's like, can we take that trophy? I'm like, well, we both kind of won here, Reezy. And he goes, Daddy. I go, we'll keep it home for a little while, and then it's going to go at the studio, buddy.
No. Yeah. That's your trophy. Keep that.
Well, we're going to see.
Keep that trophy. What do you mean you'll see?
Well, I mean, I'm going to bring it in. I don't need it in my house. Where am I going to put it at home?
What are you doing to it?
I'm not going
to
do anything to it.
Well, you're the king of
I've done enough to it already.
Out fucking trophies and all
no,
this shit.
I'm not swapping that up.
What's coming in?
You said, we'll
see. You said, you'll see is what you said. I heard it.
You're going to see exactly what you saw at the field, that trophy.
And also, I hit my longest was 271. That's what I checked in at. So I have already made my donation to the Sickle Cell Foundation of California. In the amount of $271. So proud that we raised some money for charity.
No, that's going to do a lot for them over there, man.
Hey, it's better than nothing. At least I turned that money into a positive.
What did he get? 270. Oh, God bless.
271. I bet you that's, I don't know.
You don't even know what they do over there.
I mean, I feel like 50 is what a lot of people throw out the donations, you know? Think
yeah,
if everyone threw out 50.
Less, probably.
Mm-hmm. Like none.
I'm saying if it was 2,700,
like none.
You know what I mean,
2,700. I don't have that kind of money.
You know, well, if you believe in the Sickle Cell Foundation,
I believe in them. I believe in them. So congratulations
you
to
too,
you,
buddy. Thank you
for real. This was I said it like we got to be kids for 2 hours. The fans were so great. Came with homemade signs.
Homemade signs. One
all
guy had a professionally made sign. You see that?
No.
No.
They were
all homemade, right?
I guess that's a good point. We had a lot of friends come out too. Some faces I hadn't seen in a little while.
It was nice, man.
It was awesome.
It was nice.
It was awesome.
It was a good day for sure. And you guys will enjoy it when it's all done. I'm thinking it's going to be like about a month before that thing's done. Maybe a little longer, depending on what they can turn around. But
there was a lot going on. There's a lot of posts, and they're fantastic for doing that. So
either way, it's going to be fun when you see it.
So the difference is 51. So I owe you 51 days starting Tuesday. of consecutive tweets pushing people to your Instagram.
Tweets are Instagram.
Huh?
Tweets, Instagram, Facebook.
No, no, no.
It was all social media.
It wasn't. I made it clear it was tweets because okay. I wouldn't make you litter your Instagram feed 51 consecutive days
either
of
way,
promoting Ryan Sickler.
Yeah, that's fine.
I know what I said on that.
Cool.
So congratulations.
Thanks,
Jay
buddy.
Larson Comedy.
Thanks, man. It was fun. Congrats to you, too. You put an effort out there, man. I mean, you put an effort
put
out
an
there.
Effort.
Sure did. Sure did.
I won my bet. You won yours. I knew where I was landing.
I know.
I didn't think I'd hit it 271, to be honest. 250 is really where I thought I would stop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You got that 271, player.
You got that 271. I got it.
Proud of the home run derby and proud of this week's sponsor as well. Glad to have back and happy to have back Birdwell Beach Britches. Summer is still here, you guys. And it's time to get out there in the beach, get to the pool, or get in the lake before the summer is over. And you, if you don't know what to wear, forget about flash-in-the-pan trends and guesswork and get classic surf style from Birdwell that will look good year after year. Why year after year? Because they last forever. Birdwell Beach Britches has customers that have worn the same board shorts for over 25 years. There are guys whose sons are now wearing their Birdwell board shorts because they last so long. Surfing is an American as apple pie, fireworks, and barbecue grills, baby. But how about many companies still make their surf apparel in the United States? Birdwell Beach Britches stays true to their roots by handcrafting their products in California to this day since 1961. That's insane. That's such a cool thing.
That is nuts.
It's so cool. Customers often come by their Santa Ana factory and store in the same birdies they've been wearing for decades. Birdwell Beach Britches look as good as they do today when surfers first started wearing them in 1961. Maybe even better. Outside Magazine calls them the 501s of the beach. Originally developed for surfers, Carry Birdwell's sons, Birdwell Beach Britches are purpose-built for all the rigors of surfing, but perfect for any activity under the sun. Birdwell Beach Britches were built by multiple generations of families and served generations of families. It's a fantastic company. When we got them, we were stoked, and people came to us like, oh, my God, dude, I know birdies. It's such an awesome thing. We're proud to have them. And if you want a new pair of shorts for every season, you're a clown. Birdwells, you need one, you got them, and they're going to be a lifetime.
For life.
Every pair of Birdwell Beach Britches is individually inspected to ensure the highest quality and is covered by a lifetime guarantee. If a seam, stitch, or grommet breaks, you send it back to the factory and they'll fix it. That's just ridiculous. That doesn't happen anymore. Lifetime guarantee on a pair of clothing. To get 10% off your first Birdwell Beach Britches purchase with lifetime guarantee and free shipping over $99, go to birdwell.com and use code CRAB at checkout. Go over there and check out the designs. They're super cool. It's not like they're beautiful. They're unique. You got to go check them out. Discount code CRAB at birdwell.com. Pick up your first pair of birdies and see why they've been an American icon since 1961.
I also want to say, make sure you guys get your Master Charge shirts. You got, what, 2 more weeks
get
for Master,
Master
Charge?
I think so.
Get the Master Charge. Put it on your man. Get over there and get the shirts. Check out thecrabfeast.com. You know, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and all that. You'll see the links to all the stuff we're talking about.
But you're right. That's a great shirt. You know what I mean?
It is.
The Kentucky Derbies were great.
Seen a lot of them, too, at the Home Run Derby and at the Petaluma Festival.
Exactly. And the reason we made them was because everyone likes something different. And it's, you know, some joke might resonate with you more than the other one. So if you like to put things on your
Master Charge,
then go pick up a shirt. You don't need your Master Charge for this week's ep.
No, you don't. It's free.
It's free.
As always,
and excited to have with us a longtime friend of yours for sure. I know you guys have worked a lot together, and I've been dying to have him on the podcast. We finally got him here. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome for the first time, Mr. K.P. Anderson.
K.P. Anderson.
Welcome to the Crab Feast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here, gentlemen.
KP, I like your style. You got the hat backwards. You got one ear off.
I came to work, dude.
Like he looks like he's on the ones and twos earlier.
I'm going like, I want to be like Mike Zimmer, the Vikings coach. I want to be like that intense through this whole thing. I want to be so intense my fucking eye tries to get out of my head.
He does have a fucking eye.
As long as you're not the Jeff Tice.
Yeah.
Who was
Mike
the guy?
Tice. Mike Tice.
Was
selling
that
the tickets, yeah.
Yeah, with the pencil always behind his ear.
That's what I want to ask. Is that your Patriots guy? Who's your Patriots guy? He's always got a pencil behind his ear with a big beard. Looks like he's taking sub orders.
He's the head coach of the
He's offensive a great coordinator.
Mind. Oh, is he at DC? Dude. Now he's the head coach of the Lions.
Oh, he is?
Matt Patricia, yeah.
Yep. Nothing he can use a pencil for anywhere on that fucking field these days.
He's got to race a lot of shit, man.
Right up in there.
But yeah, that dude was selling tickets. He got tickets like for his family and shit, and he sold them. Yeah.
Okay, he scalped his Super Bowl ticket. Like, he's a Vikings coach. Just like, don't even take the Super Bowl tickets, asshole. Don't.
You know those guys that get head coaching jobs, and you're like, he just must be a hell of a guy to go drinking with. You know what I mean?
Actually, weirdly, my brother was a sports radio guy in Minnesota at the time and did a lot of stuff with the Vikings, and he loved Tice. He was his favorite.
See?
Yep.
Of course he did.
He was a big dude.
Yeah.
Just big blockhead. Yeah, I remember that dude.
Listen, Mike, we're considering you for the head coaching job. Like, listen, why don't you meet me down the 99? We'll sit down, and he probably, like, slammed drinks and was a great time. They're like, you know what? Fuck it. This guy's fantastic.
This guy can get us 10 wins.
Listen, we go 8-8. Hell, we'll do it. He's a hell of a guy.
Yeah. Maybe he'll get a sex boat for the players. Oh, he got a sex boat
right,
for the players. That's right.
I told you to do it.
Dante Culpepper.
Oh, my God.
Dante.
That's right.
Yep. Guy could sling it, man.
He sure could.
Just a rifle of an arm.
Well, you had, and not to make this all about sports, but you had Brian Billick as your offensive coordinator mm-hmm. when you went that year with the greatest offense ever.
Yeah.
That was
and
my...
then flipped to the greatest defense ever. He was the head coach of. So it's pretty impressive.
Right? That was one of my favorite years in sports was when they went 15-1 with Randall.
It was
and then
nuts.
They lost. And I was like, how did they lose?
That day was one of the hardest days. I was in Minneapolis. I was at my parents' house. And I was sitting. I was like down like in this sort of crouch stance in front of the TV watching. And Gary Anderson went wide right. And perfect all year long. Head and miss. Perfect all year long.
Is that right?
Yeah, they lose the game.
Right.
Yep, they lose the game. My dad, who was so bitten by the Vikings, like just sitting there behind me, and I turned around and looked at him. He goes, "I told you they were no fucking good." I got up. I walked out of the house. I was smoking at the time. I walked out of the house to have a cigarette, and out on this cold, snow-covered Minneapolis street, just doors opened and people came out of the house. No one said a word to each other.
Oh.
Everybody just lit up cigarettes and just stood and stared at their feet.
Now, what was the deal? That was like a resurgence for him, right? Had he played it like in the year before, or did they bring him in?
I think they brought him back. I think that he. Where was he before that?
I mean, he started
Atlanta?
In Philly.
Philly, that's right. Yeah. And if memory serves, I'm probably wrong about this at some point, but if memory serves, yeah, they pulled him out of retirement.
He was straight up pocket passer. He was not like scramble. You know what I mean? Remember back in the day, he was jumping over
guys? Oh, you're talking about
guys?
Randall.
Randall Cunningham.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Gary Anderson. Yeah, Randall.
No,
Randall was out of the league, right?
I think he was doing
like construction shit in Vegas or something like that.
Way.
Yeah.
Either way, I remember just seeing him sit back in the pocket.
Hey, Cunningham!
Yeah.
Hey, Seven! Get my level over here,
get
man.
Over here, man. Get the- Vikings are on
trying
the horn,
to frame
man.
His house right now.
who was the coach back then? It was that what the fuck was his name? The guy who had that complete meltdown on air that time.
Oh, Denny Green?
Yeah, wasn't it Denny Green?
Was it Denny Green?
They are who we thought they were.
Yeah. That team, man. Good God.
That
Randy Moss, Chris Carter. Oh.
God.
Didn't you have the dude who retired at 26 to be a doctor?
Yep. Robert Smith.
Robert Smith, dude.
Yep. And now he's on ESPN doing college games.
I've never seen anyone like it, man. Lead singer of The Cure. Then
running the Cure. All, man.
Yeah. Show me.
So before we get into any further here, let's talk about you for a little bit, KP. You're obviously from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you promote what you have coming up out? Let everybody know about your latest Netflix show.
Yeah, sure. So we've got we have the recently finished Joel McHale show with Joel McHale on Netflix. The 19 episodes are still there.
Go watch them.
They're really good. I'm really proud of the work that
we did.
Great. It was our reboot of The Soup. I was the head writer and executive producer of The Soup for 11 or so years.
I want to give you props too, because you go way back to a show I really enjoyed before Real Time. You go back to Politically Incorrect, don't you?
Yes. Yeah, that was my second writing job.
ABC?
Yep.
Was it ABC?
ABC, my first joke on the air was the day the Monica Lewinsky scandal broke.
What was your first joke?
First joke was I listed all of Clinton's sex scandals, and the punchline was one more and he's going to have to give the State of the Union on Jerry Springer. That was the joke. And it was very weird because I hadn't had anything on the show. I'd been there a week and didn't get anything on. And then like he had already picked the monologue for that last show of the week, and everything was done, and then all of a sudden the news broke about Lewinsky, and so it was get back to your desk. We need a new monologue, and so I just for the first time turned in first. I wrote like 5 jokes and just got it in because I was like, I need to get it. Like, I didn't care about what happened with the president or the fate of our country or anything else. I needed a fucking joke on the air, and Bill picked that one. It was the last joke in the monologue that night. And then by like Monday morning, because it was sort of very pre things going viral. But by Monday morning, I had seen it on like CNN's Showbiz Today, and it was in the New York Times, and
right.
The Chicago Times. It was like all over, and I was kind of like, wow, this is a different, because I've been a stand up for years, and I think probably more people read that silly little joke or heard that silly little joke in some capacity than ever heard anything that I had done as a stand up, and it was just so cool to be like, oh wow, okay, so that's what this does then.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah. And were you like, did you feel like a new, like, you know, stride in your step or confidence?
Oh, absolutely.
Just because, like, you got, you're like, you know, like getting hit the first time in a fight or your first hit in the bigs. You know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it was Bill gets a bad rap for being tough on writers, I think, especially my experience with him. And by the way, he fired me twice. So
from the same show.
Yeah, he fired me and brought me back. I did like nine months sort of that the high points of the Lewinsky thing, where I kind of was like just vibing this sort of sex, drugs, and Monica Lewinsky's Jewish mother jokes kind of thing that Bill was really loving everything that I was doing, and then towards the end of it he brought me in, and I always give him credit for that. I always give him credit for both times he fired me. He looked me in the eyes when he did it.
That's all right.
Yeah, okay. And he brought me into the office. And we'd been friendly before that through stand-up. And he you know, said, listen, you know, a lot of people leave here in body bags. That's not you. We're going to bring you back at some point. We do rotate out writers, and we tend to do it at the, you know, the young guy level. And sure enough, I got rotated out. But then I bumped into him at the Improv like 6 months later. And he was like, hey, you want to come back? And I came back.
Listen, we just did another Randall Cunningham.
Randall,
we're going to bring you back. They actually replaced me with Randall Cunningham. It was really weird. He didn't do well. I'll give Bill credit for that.
How long later did he fire you again?
I think it was either 6 or 9 months that I was there the second time through, and then you just know sometimes something had changed, you know, like he really liked the certain style that I brought stuff in it for a long time. And then when I came back, I had a nice little pop right at the beginning where I was getting a lot of jokes on. And then all of a sudden it sort of dwindled down. And like the issues that I was suggesting we'd bring up that we'd talk about, it just was out of sync with him. And you could just kind of tell him the show was going to be going to London for a week while we were in this, you know, period. And it was right, like we were going to be in London when my contract was actually up by the Writers Guild. You get 10 weeks of guaranteed work and then another 3 guaranteed pay. But they got to let you know if you get to keep working. At least that was what the rules were back then. They needed to let you know at 10 weeks whether, you know, you were continuing on or not after the 13. And I just knew it. And I sort of went and knocked on his door. And he went, hey, what's going on? I go, hey, so you, yeah, the show's going to London, huh? And he goes, yeah, yeah. And I go, so did you know my contract's up while we're in London? And Bill goes, oh. And I went, I shouldn't bother dusting off the old passport, should I? And I was like, nah, you probably don't need to. Like, thanks, man.
You made it easy for him.
Yeah. And it's just so funny. Like 2 years ago, and I see Bill not that often, but I see him around the way every once in a while. Like 2 years ago, my wife and daughter and I were in Maui on vacation over the holidays. And
Look at you.
Yeah, that's right. And my wife and I had been sitting sort of just on the beach that day talking about, well, it'd be great if the kid like went to the game room tonight and we got a hold of some pot and we, you know, sat out on the deck and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, but I don't even know where to begin to find pot around here. And then we were at dinner that night and I stand up from the table to leave and I hear KP. And I turn around and it's Jeff Ross, David Spade, Bill Maher, Woody Harrelson, and my buddy Jim Valley.
It's just the table.
Yeah, and I look at Leslie and I was like,
pot.
Hey, honey, I found pot. Found a lot of pot.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So the new show coming.
Yes. So we've got starting September 14th. You heard it here first because this is before the announcement goes out tomorrow.
There you go.
We need to embargo this broad podcast until...
sure. It's going to come out.
September 14th, Norm MacDonald has a show. Premieres on Netflix. It's fantastic. It is a talk show starring Norm interviewing huge celebrities. We've got David Letterman. We've got Chevy Chase. We've got Jane Fonda. We've got Judge Judy. We've got an amazing interview with this guy, Billy Joe Shaver, who's Norm's best friend, who is the godfather of outlaw country music.
Yeah, I was going to say country music,
Who did I mention? We got Michael Keaton. We got, did I mention Spade? We've got Spade. Drew Barrymore.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, they're great episodes.
All with
so
Norm.
Fun. Yeah, all with Norm.
What about Conan?
No Conan.
No Conan.
No Conan.
Norm MacDonald on Conan are my favorite bits of television in the world.
It's amazing.
Unbelievable.
It's amazing.
Did you see that? It was like a couple years ago he was on, and when Conan like literally went to commercials, was like, I have no idea what's going on.
Right, yeah.
When he did that street joke to him, you know that one? He goes, Conan, you know my wife was in a coma recently. And he goes, no, Norm, I didn't know that. He goes, yeah. I said to the doctor said, yeah, listen, there's nothing we can do. And I said, oh my God, doctor, you sure? And he goes, well, there is one thing. And I said, doc, anything, tell me. He goes, you can perform oral sex. And he's like, Jesus Christ, doc. He goes, that's the only thing. He's like, all right, well, I'll try anything. I went in there. I came out 5 minutes later, and I go, doc, it's not working. He goes, what happened? He goes, she keeps choking. And that's when Conan was like, what the fuck is going on? I thought it was one of the greatest things I ever heard in my life.
It is the Courtney Thorne Smith, old Conan, NBC Conan, the Courtney Thorne Smith interview with Norm sitting there just mm-hmm. pulling the interview apart is one of my favorite things. I mean, working with Norm, first of all, I've known Norm forever, but doing this with him has been such like – and by the way, there's a lot of stuff that I've contributed to, that I've been a part of, that I've produced, that I've executive produced over the years. My God, I wish I could take more credit for what happened there. Norm is just Norm. He's going to do what Norm's going to do.
Really wish he got – I mean, not maybe he does and I just don't know, but I feel like with comedians, everyone is like, holy shit, Norm MacDonald. But I feel like in the public, I feel like he's one of those guys that they almost like forget how unbelievably funny he is.
He's one of those guys that I think about and I laugh at. Like his goddamn Burt Reynolds. Burt Reynolds is so crass and so bad and so great that he's like chewing that gum. Oh, and the Turd Ferguson, Turd Ferguson is one of the funniest goddamn things to me.
When I went to meet with him, my company, Pygmy Wolf Productions, produces the show in association with Lionsgate Entertainment and Netflix actually were the ones who kind of made the marriage happen, who approached and said, hey, so Norm's got a show. It's going to be shooting at the same time that Joel's going to be doing. Would you guys be interested in producing? Norm mentioned that he likes you. And I was like, yeah, sure. And I hadn't seen Norm in a long time. So we said like, well, let's have a meeting. Let's sit down make sure that we're on the same page here. So I go into this restaurant in Santa Monica and Norm's there and he sees me and he gets this great, big, bright look in his eye. He goes, oh, good. You're the guy I was thinking of when I said I liked that KP Anderson guy. And you know what? He was being fully fucking honest.
You know he was. Yeah. He really was.
Yeah.
And of course, you had to meet in Santa Monica because he don't drive.
Yeah.
No. That's yeah. See. So
that's how we became friends.
I'm sure I've told this a long time ago, but I met him. Well, I mean, I was such a huge fan, and I got to meet him. This is a little while back now. I worked with him in Irvine at the old Irvine Improv.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right before I had finished a show and then they were letting me stay on the late show to feature for him. He had come in, I guess he was working something out or whatever. And the manager at the time, Frank, goes, Ryan, do you have any weed? Will you take Norm out and get him high? And I was like, oh yeah, no problem. I have weed. So we go out and I always believe in keeping my piece clean. Mm-hmm. I always have it clean. Well, I had just cleaned it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, smokers, most people don't keep their fucking thing clean. So you got to pull like, you know, you're losing oxygen on it. So we go right out in the parking lot and we just start chatting it up. And he brings up The Office, the British Office, before the American was even out. And I'm such a fan. And we bonded. I mean, we were dying. And he hit this weed so fucking hard. And he coughed. I mean, tears are streaming down his face. And he's like, I think I'm fucked up. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to perform. I'm like, you have to go in like 15 fucking minutes. And he keeps smoking.
And the police pull up, and I'm like, oh, fuck, Norm. And the guy comes over, and he's like, hey, man, you can't be doing that. And he's, you know, he sees Norm, and he just goes, oh, okay, all right. And Norm's like, we're just trying to get a little funnier before we go in the show. And he's like, okay, you're not supposed to be doing that out here, but all right. He's like, we're going in now. We go in, and Norm tells the manager, but you know how dead serious he is. Yeah. He's like, I think Ryan's weed was laced. And Frank's like, your fucking weed was laced? I go, no. And he's like, I don't think I can perform. And he went up super high, and he just went up for, like, I'm not kidding you, a solid 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And he riffed off the menu because they had, do you remember Slice, the drink Slice?
Yeah. No, it wasn't Slice. I know what you're going to say.
That's what
Sierra
it was.
Sierra Mist.
That was it. It was Sierra Mist.
Because they had a whole deal with them when I was at
that
Levity
was
at
was.
The time back then.
And he shit all over them for Sierra 15 Mist. Minutes. And it was he's like, who the fuck orders that? You know, and it was the funniest fucking thing. He had that crowd dying. Yeah, I love that.
Yep, he is unreal. Yeah.
That's when I learned he didn't drive. He's like, no, because he told me he grew up in Toronto. Public transportation is very similar to like Manhattan, so he never bothered to drive. Yeah. So he had the car bring him from the Beverly Center all the way to Irvine and back.
Oh, that's how I originally met him was after a show at the Improv. It was just before he got SNL. And, you know, I'd watched him on a whole bunch of MTV shows and just was like, who is this guy? And like early Comedy Central stuff, and was just like, this might be the greatest comic I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I moved to LA and he's there, and I kind of step outside after the show and he's standing out front and he goes, hey, you're pretty funny there. And I go, thanks. And he goes, do you have a license to drive a motorized vehicle? Yeah, get in the car. Yeah, like, thanks for the compliment. Yeah. Get in the car, Norm.
That's amazing.
Yep.
Hey, only that guy could get away with that.
No, he's just, I mean, he is otherworld. He thinks in ways that, you know, he thinks in ways that human beings don't.
Yeah.
And just as, I just think, have you read his book? Have you read the,
no.
No.
If you like Kerouac, if you like, you know.
Yeah, Kerouac's my shit, dude.
If you like, it's that. It's an update of,
really?
You know, on the road, told through Norm's eyes with this. It's called Based on a True Story. And it's about, it's basically, he decided to write this book because he decided that there is no real truth. It's only what we remember.
Yeah.
And so he just put together what he presumes his life has been. And it's
whether it's
fucking
accurate or not.
Whether it's accurate or not, yeah.
That's
goes, this is how it is as far as I see it.
Right.
And it's amazing. And it's he weaves into it this road trip that he takes with Adam Egget, the guy who's the manager at the comedy store, who's the sidekick on our show.
I just talked to him the other night about your show. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so good. You guys are gonna love the show and read the book. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you're a Norm fan, support the show, watch it on Netflix.
Please.
It comes out on what, September 14th? September 14th. All right.
That's dope.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to talk to you, too, because you came up in the Minnesota comedy scene, right?
Yes, sir.
You started stand-up in Minnesota.
Yep.
And who were, like, your peers? Were you Hedberg was at the time?
Mitch and I knew each other from when we were, like, teenagers. Mitch actually took off and started comedy elsewhere. He started comedy in Florida.
Okay.
In Mitch's words, I meant for it to be Texas, but the alignment was off. that was great. Yeah,
Is Swartzen in your group?
I was actually the headliner at Knuckleheads at the Mall of America the night of Nicky's first set.
When he was waiting tables across the way.
And by the way, I was totally a prick about, like, I am Nick. They said I could go on tonight. And I was like, that's fucking great. Don't chew up too much time.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, where do you want him to go on? You want him to go on before the feature act? No, put him on before me. And then he goes up and he blows it up.
Destroys.
Does the roller coaster thing right out the top. And I'm just standing in the back going, shit, now I got to work. And Nick, it's so funny. We're just, we've stayed very close since then. And he just shot his Netflix special in Montreal at the festival a couple weeks ago. So he was sort of at the tail end of my time in Minneapolis was when Nick came out. But Stanhope was coming through a lot. Marie and I were very contemporary. I think that our first night on stage at the Comedy Gallery Uptown was the same night.
Wow.
Jackie Cation was in that group.
God, that's a great class.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about Louis?
Minnesota.
Louis Anderson.
Louis was well before our time, but Louis was kind of like the
around
reason
stuff.
We all thought we could do it, you know? Like, Louis, I was in high school in Cambridge, Minnesota, watching a Louis Anderson special on PBS going, that's mom, that.
Yeah.
You know.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And I got to ask you, because I feel like Prince, don't you, mm-hmm. you worked with him or for you did something
no,
no, or was, a show
was,
or something?
There was there. So I got a lot of work opening for different musical acts for various for like different reasons because I was pretty dark. I was pretty caustic and fairly dirty. And so it was always weird when I'd get asked to like it made sense when they go, hey, you know, you want to open for like Slaughter tonight?
You, wait, yeah, you sure. Open for them?
Fucking open for Slaughter at the Illinois State Fair, bitch.
and the winning cow is 567.
Yeah, pretty much it.
J.P.
Yeah.
Anderson.
Yep.
Who else have you opened for?
But well, so Tony.
Yeah, Tony. I didn't know
they've done it again.
Tony,
yeah, yeah.
That's what they were playing Glam Slam. They were playing Prince's Club. Okay. And I opened for them there, and Prince came to the show.
Now his club, how big is this? Is this like a House of Blues?
Was pretty big. It was
intimate or big?
No, it was pretty big. It was probably about 500 people capacity, I think, maybe more.
And would he just when he was in town, every now and then Prince would float through.
He had
literally
a little
unannounced.
Like, yeah,
he probably could
way in the back up in a balcony, watch the shows and stuff like that. And so he had been at a show that I did, and then Tom Rhodes and I were playing a club together the next week, and they invited us to come to Paisley Park for a private concert. And this was in like at the beginning of the Symbol days, where he wasn't Prince, he was
right,
thing.
Yeah, the sign.
And so we went out to it with our friend Michael Thorne, who's another comic from Minneapolis, and it started at like 2:00 in the morning. He played till like 6 in the morning, and very much like you go backstage, very much like the Charlie Murphy story. You go backstage, and there's breakfast for you and waffles and shit, and everybody kind of stands in line and waits to shake his hand. Yeah,
no fucking way,
yeah.
Dude.
Yeah, and it's just him working out shit.
So you stood in line.
There was like 45 people there. Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was incredible.
I am Prince. That's incredible. Great, man. I'm just gonna get this sausage buffet over here, yeah, man.
But my favorite thing that you say, I walk up to shake his hand, and he goes, you're very funny. And I said, or he goes, I think you're very funny. I'm very dry. Just looks at me. I think you're very funny.
Had you performed?
Nobody'd seen me like
he
a
saw
week
it.
Earlier.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah. 2020.
Yeah, and he goes,
wow.
He goes, I think you're very funny.
And you remember.
And I go, yeah, it shows. And he goes, and he goes, see?
Shut up. That's so cool. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Right, yeah. Here it is. Right, this shit,
yeah,
right here.
Oh, that's tight.
Yeah,
my
pretty
buddy,
cool.
I have a good buddy out here, Tony Jones. My boy,
yeah,
Tony Jones, who's from.
I've told
Twin
him
Cities.
That story before. Maybe I haven't.
The Kirby Puckett.
I don't know if I have.
But he used to wash cars back in the day, and Prince rolled through, and he washed his car, and he didn't he have a purple. He literally painted his house purple at mm-hmm. one point, right?
Yeah,
And Tony's he's a screenwriter, and he wrote a great movie about this kid growing up when Purple Rain came out, the movie. Mm-hmm. And working at a little movie theater and stuff, and his perspective, it's like everyone in from that area is like, oh, dude, don't even fucking you talk shit about Prince,
yeah.
Like
no.
People will knife
no
you.
It's no good. I mean, because it's like if you consider, I grew up in Cambridge, Minnesota. It's an hour north of Minneapolis, and like 10 years behind in a lot of ways. And so sitting in my buddy Kyle Thomas's house and him putting on 1999.
Yeah,
and going, yo, this guy's from Minneapolis, and you listen to it, and it's like between that and I don't mean to sound date myself so much and sound so fucking pedestrian, but I am is between that and like In Living Color,
yeah.
Like that's how you learn about when you're in Cambridge, Minnesota. Our black guy was our gay guy, poor bastard. It was like is that it's you don't see a lot of anything different than mm-hmm. yourself.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden something like that comes in just like
connects you to
yeah
it.
My mom was a very sort of liberal, now card carrying, so she preached a lot of tolerance and understanding and everything else, but there was literally nothing to hold up and go, see, this is what I mean.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, that was like a big turning point between that, Eddie Murphy. All these things came along that all of a sudden made you go, oh, yeah, wait.
Yeah.
There's all these other people out there. Maybe I'll meet one.
I remember reading somewhere where Chris Rock always said In Living Color was the Howard of comedy and SNL was the Harvard of comedy. And then when I heard that, I was like, that's...
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yep. But also for me...
Before we leave Prince,
I'm going to go... Like, I have a Prince thing to say,
I was
too,
thinking about Living Color.
Yeah.
The band.
I totally, you know.
It's pretty good, too. Yeah, I was talking about Keenan's show. Yeah.
The only black band with their political quotes were JFK. Ask not what you're cooking. They're black having white quotes, and then there's white bands having.
Yeah.
Guys, are taking a quick time out to tell you about a sponsor this week, RX Bar, a whole food protein bar. RX Bar lets the core ingredients do all the talking. Egg whites for protein, dates to bind, nuts for texture, and other delicious ingredients like unsweetened chocolate, real fruit, and spices like sea salt or cinnamon. The adult bars come in 14 delicious flavors such as peanut butter, chocolate, sea salt, and mixed berry. All bars are gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free, have no artificial colors, artificial flavors, preservatives, or fillers. RX Bar also has a kid line. They have the same whole food ingredients as RX Bar, just smaller and in kid-friendly flavors like chocolate chip, PB&J, double chocolate chip, and peanut butter chocolate. We've both tried them. They sent them to us, and they are fantastic.
I loved them. And it's not one of those, like, this tastes good for a protein bar. This tastes good. It really tastes good.
My favorite was the peanut butter chocolate one. I'm not usually a fan of that, but Craig grabbed the other one. I grabbed that one, and I loved it. I gave a little nibble to the kids. They loved it as well. RX Bar is offering an exclusive pack of 6 adult bars and 4 kid bars for the whole family to enjoy. For 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/crab and use promo code crab at checkout. If you want a snack to take on the run and something easy and something quick that's healthy, this is a must. I love them. I'm stoked that we have them on board. Go to rxbar.com/crab. Use promo code crab at checkout.
Guys, looking to last longer and go a few extra rounds? Talking about bedroom performance here, guys. Get the BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com is the first ever chewable that brings your performance to another level. Check this out. They've got the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so they work. And since they're chewable, they work faster than a pill. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And this stuff is cheaper than those other two, so this is a no-brainer. Plus, you don't need to get to the doctor's office or spend time awkwardly waiting in the pharmacy line because Blue Chew ships straight to your door in discreet packaging. Here's a great deal for you guys. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order free when you use promo code CRABFEAST. You just pay the $5 shipping, all right? That's Blue, B-L-U-E. Chew.com, promo code CRABFEAST. One more time, BlueChew.com. Get your first order free when you use promo code CRABFEAST. You pay the $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code CRABFEAST. Back to the show.
My favorite thing my mom has ever said to me on the day that Prince died, she called me and she goes, "So did you hear that Prince died?" And I said, "Yeah." And she goes, "Did you know that he was from Minnesota?"
Nuh-uh.
Like literally everybody. Everybody, mom. Now, how?
That is such
so
a mom.
That is a mom move.
Hilarious. Like, way to make it about you, ma.
I remember being a kid in sixth or seventh grade, maybe, when there was this girl, and she was in eighth grade, and I had the biggest crush on her. She was so cute. She had braces. Oh, she was starting to get boobs. Like, I was like, oh, my God. I was this kid's older sister, and I was like, oh, my God, you're so cute. And she loved Prince. And that's who turned me on to Prince. And when I remember seeing it.
Turned me on?
Turned me on to Prince. She was so cute. And I just remember, like, for me, it was the first time I had seen. I was like, what is this guy? Is this guy, he doesn't seem gay because all these gorgeous women are with him.
Yeah.
But also,
and he's wearing a male symbol on his neck, man.
Like, well, not then. He was Prince then. But I was like, and he also dresses like a woman. So it was, and then I'm like, and his music kicks fucking ass. It's not what I'm used to. Yeah. Kiss and AC/DC. But then I'm like, well, these guys wore fucking makeup, listen to him play guitar lick,
and you go, fuck.
Yeah. So he was, I loved him. I just, you know, he challenged everything that I had even.
Yeah.
Like, your mom preaches tolerance, but again, you're to your point, like, there was no one in our neighborhood that was anything like that.
There is something, by the way, that's a little weird, like, about, you know, they when they talk, because a lot, you know, we hire and work with a lot of people inside that millennial thing, and you hear a lot of the, you know, there's so much made of millennials and what they are, and then one of the things, like, in terms of sexuality, everyone's on a scale, and that's like, that's new, and it's like, that's not really new. Like, in the 80s, androgyny was masculinity in such a huge fucking way. Like, Tommy Lee,
Motley Crue, when I first saw the Poison album cover, I thought they were all women.
Yeah.
I was like, these guys have like straight up. It was beyond the Kiss makeup where they covered the face and had these patterns and shit. It was looking like a woman.
Yeah. It was very inspired by Bowie, look wise, and very inspired by the three chords that they learned sound wise.
That's right. That's the truth. Yeah.
Yep.
So back to comedy early in Minnesota. Yeah. I want to. You have a Hedberg story, and anytime someone has. I mean, I can't remember who the hell it was that had one and said, oh, I got this Mitch Hedberg story after we turned the mics off and packed everything up and he had to leave. We're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. So
did you do a lot of shows with Mitch? Or
no, because we came
he was
up,
Florida?
Yeah, we came up at the same time. Like, we kept in touch relentlessly up until sort of the bitter end. By then, you know, he was touring constantly and I was – and by then I was sort of like entrenched as a writer out here, so we didn't see enough of each other anymore. But we kept in touch a lot, and we did a week together in Vegas that I've told that story to Jay Moore on a billion podcasts and a billion places, but we stayed very close friends for a long, long, long time. And, am I supposed to just jump into the story? Should I just tell it?
So, yeah. Or you can tell the one you told with Jay too.
No, it wasn't that one. There was, so. This is the sort of like Mitch in a distance and how he could still just fuck your day up if he wanted to. There was a time a friend of mine, I'm only going to use first names here, a friend of mine, Amy, and I had never done acid before. And we were out here in L.A. and never done acid before. And someone gave me some acid and I was like, let's do acid. And she was house sitting for two other friends of ours, Paul and Vicky, and at some apartment in like West L.A. someplace. So we did. We went to their place and like we were supposed to just like watch the dog and instead we dropped acid. And
just the two of you were dropping
just
acid.
Two of us
at
dropping
someone
acid.
Else's house.
At someone else's house, And it went all kinds of bad. It was just like I've done mushrooms before and mushrooms are just kind of like, yeah, you talk to God for a while, you talk to the devil for a while, it's all good. And acid was just like mushrooms with a guitar string running through my body and I was, fuck! And I felt like my skin felt like tinfoil, and I was all night long just in a bad, bad, bad place. Never slept.
And is she having the same bad experience?
Yes.
Okay.
And so neither of us came down. Neither of us slept. We were just fucking ruined. And Paul and Vicky had been off that weekend chaperoning a church youth ski trip.
Oh, my God.
In Big Bear. And so they come walking through the door at, like, noon. And we've been there since, like 11 o'clock the night before with no sleep and just tearing our own skin off. And they come in and they're like, hey, what's going on? And we're like, nothing. And we're still just kind of – and I go, can I go home? I won't go home, but I don't think I should drive home. Can I go home? And Paul goes, yeah, I'll give you a ride home. And I go, okay, cool. And so we get in the car, and he's got this, like, old classic Mercedes that suddenly feels like – just mat, like it's got your the joint. Big steering wheel, and you know, with there's space between the seats. And
oh,
the door.
Yeah, tons of space.
Just way too much when you're still coming off the acid.
And well, it sounds like anything.
We're going really fast, and nothing is protecting me. And this is a lap belt. It's not a shoulder lap
That's
belt.
Right.
It's a lap belt.
No airbags.
And yeah, and so I'm just and so like trying desperately to just seem normal. I turn to Paul. And I go, so how was your trip? And he goes, it was great, man. We were just like, it was just so we were out with the kids and we were, you know, one with nature and with the kids. We were just talking to them and like there's a spiritual component to it, but it wasn't shoving Christianity down their throats. It was just letting them know that the world's here for a reason and, you know, you're here for a reason. And I just feel like it's one of those times where you just spend a little bit of time and you make a difference, you know? He goes, what'd you guys do? And I went, we did some acid in your apartment. I'm not down yet.
I'm not down.
He goes, all right, well, we'll
this
just
tank you're driving scared the shit out of me, bro.
That's an album title. I'm not down yet.
He's like, all right, well, we'll just drop you off then. And so he drops me off at my place. I lived over by the Improv on Kilkea Street at the time in a house with a bunch of guys. And I get in and I'm just fucking freaking out. And I'm like, I know who will be able to help me. Like, you remember the Saturday Night Live sketch with Dan Aykroyd playing Jimmy Carter?
Oh,
and
yeah.
The girl, I took some acid. And like, oh, you took some yellow sunshine. I'm like, oh, Mitch will be my yellow sunshine guy. He'll help me understand what I should do. So I call up Mitch and I go, hey, by the way, listen, I'm still on acid from last night and I can't seem to get down. And I just want to fucking sleep, you know? And Mitch goes, oh, yeah, man. So what you should do, like, you got a pool, right? And I go, yeah. He goes, yeah, you should smoke a joint and then go skinny dip for a while and then lay down in your bed with the windows open, lay on the top of the sheets. And I'm just like,
that sounds like a perfect day.
Yeah, like writing it down. Yeah, but it's January and it's fucking cold outside and we haven't heated the pool. And so I jump in the pool and freezing cold water. And then I go back in the house and I open up the windows in my bedroom and I lay down and I go to sleep for like a day. And I wake up with fucking bronchial pneumonia.
Shut up! There's your advice.
Thanks, Mitch.
Thank you, man. But you did sleep.
I did sleep, yeah. Yep. That stopped smoking amazing. Around then, too.
Pneumonia.
Yeah.
Good That's a fun Lord. One. Yeah. Well, is that why you stopped smoking? Because you got sick?
Yeah, I think I picked it up again for a couple years after that. But
That's how my wife quit, too.
Yeah?
Because she got sick? She was in Switzerland. I remember, like, talking, and she was like, had this horrible cough, and she's like, I think I'm going to quit smoking. Like, what? I'm like, why? She's like, well, because I can't smoke. I'm like, so sick. Like, I couldn't even imagine. And that's, quit.
Yep. That's amazing. Something does trigger at some point. You just got, but now I do Nicorette mints. And
so you really did.
Yeah. No, I'm way more addicted to these than I ever was cigarettes. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Rotting my gums out of my head. But,
hey, how long have you been doing them? Oh, good point.
Yeah. A couple years.
Yeah.
I picked them up long after I stopped smoking. I'm an asshole is what it really boils down to. Take these. I'll kick you in the dick. I was like, okay. And the next thing you know, I'm at the drugstore buying fucking Nicorette mints. And
there's this one story I want to talk about because I've worked on a few projects with you.
Mm-hmm.
You seem so even keeled. I've seen the fire, though. Believe me, I know it's there. But you don't strike me as a guy that gets into fights or gets arrested. And I love this because so many people have surprised me with the arrests.
Yeah.
You know, I've been in plenty of fights, knock on wood, never been arrested. Jay's never been punched in his face.
Never been punched in the face?
I've never been punched, period.
Oh, shit.
And I've never punched another human.
Shit, dude.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Which is it's an impressive record to go 40-some
but
years.
But I can't imagine, like, I honestly... Having known you, we don't know each other as well as I know Ryan, having known you over the years, I can't imagine someone really wanting to punch you either.
Oh, I've had some people that want to punch me.
Man. Believe me, my arm's itched a few times.
Well, yeah, you guys got to work together. I mean, I just see them on golf courses and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had a couple people.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I just never did.
So I want to hear the other side of KP. Mm-hmm. Whatever you're comfortable, I know you're comfortable talking about it. So let's hear about your arrest.
Okay.
I want to hear about your arrest.
All right. So I got arrested. trying to think of the year. Had to be like 90, maybe 92, 93, somewhere in that ballpark.
So you're like 20?
Yep. Walker, Minnesota. Right. Just my family and I just got back from a vacation there. It's a beautiful lake. Horrible name. It's called Leech Lake, but it's
a good name.
Yeah. My family had a cabin there for years.
Everyone in Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Go be down to Alligator Alley. Come on down.
Yeah. And by the way, it wasn't a lake home. It was a cabin.
It's a cabin.
It was a cabin. Sure. Yeah. It was a motel unit that my grandfather was. They were taking down the motel. My grandfather was like, save that part.
Yeah.
And like towed it up to a lot and dropped it there and then bad wiring and no pipes and shit. And,
that's all you need.
Did you hear it in his voice?
Yeah.
I was just about to say, that's his shit.
Every
right
one of
there.
Our family, I mean, we don't stay in cabins, but like, I love that getting rustic. Yep.
Rustic.
That's when you bond as a family.
You know what you rustic. Do? You know what you do? You go up there and you get someone to punch you in the fucking face.
Yeah.
And then you know it's all God together.
You fucking prove yourself you're a real man.
Catch a pike and get punched in the fucking face.
Right, son. Get them leeches up in your body, player.
Some buddies of mine and I took what we called our mushroom trip up to the cabin. And we drove up there from Minneapolis, about 3 hours from Minneapolis, 4 hours from Minneapolis. And we had a Suburban and got up there. And we went into town the first night after we had taken some mushrooms. We go into town and we go to a bar. And we're, you know, guys in our 20s hanging out in this bar in this small town. And my buddy Kyle and I, same guy from Prince album, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how that, I keep my friends. And Kyle and I were sitting in a corner and we were looking at the gumball machines. And we were like, those colors are pretty and we're out of change. So we stole the gumball machines. We just literally got up from the chair, grabbed the gumball machines.
The whole machines?
Yeah. Walked them out to the truck.
Yeah, because it's never just one. They're like a, like
right,
a three.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Of course. Like some M&M's, together, some gumballs, and like and Nicorette mints.
Walked them back to the truck, threw them in the truck, and went and got the rest of the guys.
Then
and
went left. Back
went
in.
Back to the
then
cabin.
Went back in.
Went back in. Now, guys, we got the gumball machines. Let's go.
We got the machines in the truck, guys.
Sell out that tag.
Tell those guys that.
Four other guys
we
going.
Stole those gumballs.
What?
Got the fucking gumball machines. Let's go. And so we go back up to the cabin, and we didn't have any change at the cabin either, but we had guns. So we
perfect.
Tied,
sounds like a great solution.
Yeah, right.
Fashioned ourselves some nooses and hung the gumball machines from the trees.
Ah.
And we were shooting at them, missing wildly. And so we
even
wake
better.
Up, yeah, wake up the next morning, and there's just gumball machines hanging like
no
like
one
an
hit
Eastwood
them?
Movie from the, tree.
Totally. Yeah.
So we go into town for breakfast because everybody's just too messed up to try to cook anything. We go back into town for breakfast, and we're driving into town, and all of a sudden a squad car comes up behind us and pulls us over. And you know, we're waiting in the car, and we go, what's that all about? Was anybody speeding? Who was driving? No, I wasn't speeding. My buddy Tom was driving. I wasn't speeding. And
I mean, I changed lanes properly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And the cop comes up and he goes, can I see everyone's driver's license in the car, please? And we're like, yeah, sure. And we hand him forward. And Tom, my buddy who's driving, says, okay, why are you asking for all of our driver's licenses? Oh, your truck is suspected in a felony last night.
A felony?
And like Kyle and I look at each other and I was like, shit. And I'm all the way in the back of the truck. And I go, like, officer, I'm coming out. I'm going to climb some seats here. So I'm rolling out and I go, hey, listen, this might be
you
about.
You stepped the, over and climbed out of that thing. Yeah.
Like, this That's might be about dude. Some gumball machines by chance. And he goes, yes, it's about the gumball machines. And I go, yeah, listen, that was just a stupid, drunken, dumbass prank. Like, well, yeah, I'll tell you what, we'll run back to the cabin and bring them right back.
They're hanging in a sycamore tree right out there.
And he goes, oh, you'll bring them back either way, pal. And I was like, oh, fuck. And so he goes, all right. So everybody, like, it's Walker, Minnesota. They had, like, two squad cars. And they're like, so we can't throw you all in the fucking thing. So just everybody sit in the Suburban and follow me back to the jail. And so we go
Shut
back.
Shut the fuck up.
Put you on the honor system?
Yeah.
Well,
the guy
who
stole the gumball machine.
Yeah. Well, he did turn himself in.
So we had time to develop a legal strategy.
Yeah, I mean,
in the car.
But how many of you? Five?
Yeah,
that's a lot
six,
of people to
guys.
Trust. That's a lot of
six
people
guys,
to trust to keep it straight.
Well, and this is the conversation. Is one, we do not want the cops to go to get the gumball machines. We need guys to get loose. To
loose.
Go back to get the gumball machines.
Like they're in the old west.
Yeah.
Break
because like we don't want them going to the cabin because that's where the guns and the drugs are and we can't have
you
that.
You cannot have that.
Yeah. So it's like, so we're okay. So we're not going to do that. The other thing is we collectively agree. Like I wasn't even the one who suggested it. Kyle wasn't the one who suggested it. But like this is stupid. They're not going to prosecute all of us for this stupid thing. So just everybody be fuzzy about who did it. And eventually they'll just – and yeah, okay. And so we get in there. And I say, excuse me, how did you know that it was like, how would you from the driver's license? And he goes, one of the guys gave a girl his business card last night.
My God.
And we all look at my friend Andy Stewart and just fucking stew. And
you're
he goes,
not going to believe
Yeah, and he
this.
Just gets his look on
Andy
his face.
Andy Stewart! Get your ass in here, Andy Stewart.
That business card.
By the way, he lives in Amsterdam now. I hope he's listening.
So, does he hang with Tom Rhodes?
So Stu goes in, and he's in there like 2 minutes and comes walking out, and the cop comes out and goes, all right, who's Kyle and who's KP?
Oh, my God.
We're in calling our parents, getting a couple hundred bucks sent on down. Yep. Yep. Got a little community service for that one. That was
ratted
a fun one.
You right the fuck out.
Yeah.
Like, so what'd you have to do? Commute up
like,
to do it?
Some, yeah, clean some highways up and walk around. It was great. I got to go to the cabin, do mushrooms. It was a fucking blast.
How did you get the gumball machines back?
The guys went back while Kyle and I
And
were
they never came
our,
up to check them or anything? No. Oh, you're fucking lucky on that.
And you're lucky you never hit them.
Yeah.
With the guns.
That's true.
You're lucky you're a bad
shot.
Yeah, by the way, when you're shooting at a gumball machine when you're on mushrooms, gumball machine and your buddy Tom's head look a lot alike.
Like, wait, what does that dude do in Amsterdam now? Do you know?
You know, I do know this. I don't know what he does there exactly, except I know that it's for Taco Bell.
Oh my God!
Right. Yeah, like he's high up in the Taco Bell corporate structure.
Oh man, he's living that Taco Bell life.
Like if you're getting Taco Bell kickbacks in Amsterdam, I guess you're probably doing pretty well, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah,
living that AD life.
If you're getting like a penny for every fucking Taco Bell taco that's sold.
Is that the only time you've ever been arrested in your life?
Only time I'm going to talk about here.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, there's another.
There's other stuff, but it's not that right. That one's the funny story. And nothing domestic.
No,
of course. Good job, KP.
Just mild vandalism.
What about the fight? You want to fight, but in an interesting way.
I want to fight without ever throwing a punch.
Yes.
Yes.
That's impressive.
Las Vegas, Nevada.
You should take notes on this, Jay.
What's to take notes on? I've won every fight I've ever been in.
You've never been in any.
That's what I'm saying. I've been in fights, just with brawls.
Las Vegas, Nevada. 1995, 6, somewhere around then, with a comic by the name of Chris Crazy Legs Fonseca.
Okay.
One of the greatest human beings that ever lived.
Mm-hmm.
Still living. He's in Colorado. Chris has cerebral palsy. He's had cerebral palsy for most of his life. He is, or all. Do you get cerebral palsy for all your life? I can't remember.
You can get it later in life.
Okay, so.
I believe. So, maybe I'm wrong about that.
I have no idea.
Genius comic. And is able to tell jokes. Like, he's got timing, even though he's got. I want to be clear about this. Like, the impression that I'm doing is not an impression of him that I'm doing to besmirch him.
Yeah.
I'm doing this impression because this is what he sounds like. And I may or may not have spent some time on an audience back mic while he was doing his act, doing that impression of him as his inner monologue, and that would piss him off a lot. But so
Chris was always like, hi. So when I was a kid, I ran away from home. I made it. 3 blocks in 2 weeks.
Oh, man.
And so that was Chris in a nutshell. Yeah. Like, he was in a wheelchair and just, like, the greatest fucking guy. And he's clean and sober now, but he was a prolific drinker in his day. And
does he have a joke about how when he comes home, he's sober, the key, he rattles the key, but when he's drunk, it goes straight in. I can't remember. I'm fucking
yes,
it up.
Yes, that is,
You know what I'm saying? Yep. It's his hand stops shaking when he's drunk, and it goes right in, and he gets in easy. But when he's sober, he rats himself out coming in late.
Yep. So Chris was brilliant. Just a brilliant
guy. Was he a Minnesota guy, too?
No, he was Colorado.
Okay.
Colorado Springs, I want to say that. Colorado Springs. And so we're in Vegas working together, and we're out after a show one night. We were playing the Riviera and the Improv when it was at the Riviera or the Riviera Comedy Club, whatever it was. And then we were out at the Luxor together and my girlfriend at the time was with. And so we're sitting at the bar, Chris and I just pounding shots of tequila. And my girlfriend is sitting over at a slot machine, just minding her business, playing the slots. And all of a sudden, like, 4 hammerhead guys come walking up and kind of surround her, and they're, like, hitting on her. Well, and, like, by the way, these guys were walking up to a single woman. Like, they didn't see me. They didn't see us together, at least as far as I know.
They said, ooh, nickel slots. But, that's a money right there.
Yeah, but I'd been drinking a lot, and I was feeling pretty bulletproof, and I was going to fight 4 guys. And like I just got up without saying a word, and I start walking towards them and, you know, squaring my shoulders, ready to go. And all of a sudden this wheelchair goes rolling by me and I hear, I got this.
Shut up.
So Chris rolls up next to the guy.
Get him, Crazy Legs. Yeah,
and like the guy who's like closest to my girlfriend, he's got his arm on her back, and it's very creepy in these days. And he's like talking to her, and all of a sudden Chris wheels up next to him and goes, excuse me, could you tell me where the bam? And he just throws like the cleanest punch I've ever seen a human being throw right across the guy's fucking chin and drops him like a sack of potatoes.
Man.
Right there.
Yes.
That's an angle coming up right there, you know.
And by the way,
shutdown button right there on the side of that chin. Right
if
there,
I go up and hit that guy, 4 guys are beating the shit out of me.
Yeah.
He goes up and hits the guy, and 3 guys are standing there going,
slowly back up.
What do we do here? And Chris and security comes up, and they're like, "What's going on?" And Chris goes, "I'm sorry, I had a seizure, I think."
Shut the fuck up, dude. Yeah.
You touch him, he'll turn that shit into a hate crime. Yeah, you know what I mean?
You can't fuck with his ass.
Crazy Legs Fonseca, he was the fucking
That's best. Awesome, yeah. Dude.
Yeah. Does he still do comedy?
I think so. I know. I still see he posts jokes and stuff on Facebook from time to time. I think he's still out taking a gig here and there.
Man, that's a great story.
Yeah, brilliant comic. If you ever get a chance. Yeah.
I want you. I want to stay because I want to talk about your career for a little bit here too. But you had a Ralphie May story. You said he helped you.
Hmm.
Now, Ralphie was Texas, right?
Ralphie was Texas.
So how did you guys meet? On the road?
Yeah, we met in El Paso. Back in those days.
Did you road dog it like crazy?
Oh, yeah. I was out from like 91 until about 96, 97.
Headlining
like one-nighter rooms and, you know, and every once in a while getting a week-long club. But it was up in the Midwest. I would headline the week-long clubs. But a lot of the times it was just, you know, anywhere between fucking, you know, northern Saskatchewan and McAllen, Texas, wherever the $165 bucks was waiting for me was where I'd be. And guys, comics back then, like, would hear stories about each other. It was, you know, very pre-internet, so you'd hear something that someone did someplace. Mm-hmm. And I was always in some kind of trouble, and Ralphie was always in some kind of trouble, and Mitch was always in some kind of trouble, and Stanhope was always in some kind of trouble. And especially in that sort of pocket of one-night gigs that we all worked, like, there was always – you'd get there, and you'd do something really fucked up, and you'd think it was the most fucked up thing anybody would ever do, and they'd go, "Oh, Stanhope was here last week." Like, you're not even close.
Yeah.
And so like Ralphie and I knew of each other, and I was at the Laugh Stop in El Paso, and I get a call while I'm there. I'm just waiting in the green room to go on, and Bart, the owner, comes and goes, "Hey, Ralphie May's on the phone for you." And I go, "Oh shit." So I've never talked to him before, and I pick up the phone and, "Hey player, you coming to this restaurant at this time? You're gonna know me when you see me, motherfucker." And I was like, "Okay, fine, sure." So I get done with the show. I go to this like all night diner, I'm sitting down eating, and a mariachi band comes up, and this massive kid comes following behind him dancing. Like, somehow he fucking got the band together. He did everything else. And he was like, "Me and you, we going to know each other forever, dog." And that was Ralphie.
That is Ralphie.
Yeah, in a nutshell.
I love that.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think I lived in L.A. at the time, but I was never there. And then Ralphie moved to L.A. not long after. And we did a lot of, you know, playing Scrabble, hanging out, doing all this stuff. And Ralphie was so much better at making friends with everybody than I was. Like, I was never – nobody's ever, like, accused me of being, like, a hostile guy or anything. But I can be very, like, when I'm done, I'm out of here kind
of. That's a lot of people say.
Yeah.
I just –
That's what a lot of people said about you.
Yeah. But Ralphie – so Ralphie would always want to pull me into the party. Mm-hmm. Like, I always wanted – and I was also very, like – I just fucking wanted to make it so bad that I just couldn't stand, like, being broke and out. It drove me crazy. And
Ralphie did not
bother him in the least. It was like, "We're all going to my place. I'm cooking." And so he would always drag me out to stuff, always drag me out to stuff. And then one day, it was between – God, what was I? Done the X show on FX. I think it was right after that. That Ralphie called me, and he goes, "Hey player, Jay Moores and I are playing Scrabble, and we're smoking some weed, and JJ wants to talk to you about some shit." And Jay and I had known each other for years, but had never been close friends, but always liked to, when we get together and talk football or whatever. And he goes, "So we can go to the dog park up on Mulholland. So come on up." So I tell my wife, I was like, "Jay,
I love
Moore
that Ralphie just gives you the most random places to
diners
meet
and diners, dog yeah. parks."
Yeah. So I take my wife and my poor cocker spaniel Ziggy, who's the pygmy wolf. The company is named after. That's Tallulah. That's the Yorkie. Ziggy's not with us anymore.
I just wanted to see if she was sleeping over there.
Oh, she's sound asleep. But we take Ziggy up to the dog park, and we wait for like 2 hours. And no Jay, no Ralphie. They don't show up. And by that point in time, the poor fucking dog is just exhausted. Yeah, like, 16 laps around the park. He's been laid four times. Everything, like, just done. And so finally, I'm like, fuck, I guess they're not showing. We got to go. So we get back in the car, and we're living over on this side of the hill down down by the Beverly Center. And we drive all the way back home, and we get out of the car, and my phone rings, and it's Ralphie. And he goes, hey, where are you? We just got here. I'm like, fuck.
Oh, my God.
I was like, get back in the car. Get the dog back in the car. We got to go back up. Oh, and I didn't have a job. You know, right. So we go, and it's a Sunday afternoon, so we go all the way back up there. And we're up there, and Jay and Ralphie are just baked. I mean, just gone. And so it was like that week was the week that George Harrison from the Beatles had died. And so I'm not high. But I've got to sit and listen to Jay and Ralphie, who've clearly been talking about George Harrison for about 6 hours, continue to fucking talk about George Harrison. And, like, I'm listening to it. Jay, like, just pulls his pants down and pisses, like, four times in front of me. Like,
just standard.
And finally I go, yeah, boy, if anybody could have done, like, an Obi-Wan and disappeared inside his cloak, it would have been that George Harrison, huh? And Jay goes, that's it. Yeah. What were we here to talk about? And I go, fuck it, dude. I'm going home. You assholes killed my dog. Yeah, see you later. And so we're walking on. And as I'm leaving, Jay goes, oh, hey, I'm starting a sports talk show on ESPN. And I feel like you should be the head writer.
Wow.
And I go, okay. And I was like, not believing for a second that any of this is going to happen. And then a day later, Ralphie calls and he's like, he wasn't going to do it. And I told him to fucking do it. And Ralphie, I actually, you know, Ralphie, as Stanhope used to say, when Ralphie talks, you get corn on your face. But I was like, that one I believe. that he actually kind of held JJ's feet to the fire and went, no, this is the guy. And I mean, was so, like, when we were doing that show, it was only 26 episodes.
That's more sports?
Yeah.
Yeah.
JJ hired all of his friends. Like, everybody was a comic, and everybody, like, none of them had credits. Nobody had writing credits at all. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I was the leader of this group who would, like, sit down at a table and just pitch shit for themselves to Jay.
You know what I'm thinking? I can do.
Yeah. Ralphie was the only guy. Ralphie still had tour dates, and Jay loved Ralphie so much.
He wrote on that? Ralphie wrote on?
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
But Jay would let Ralphie keep his tour dates and just send in jokes whenever he felt like
That's
it.
That's tight.
So, like, in that, like, crush of trying to launch a show and start it and, like, learn a network and all the other stuff and, you know, first-time head writer, it was such chaos. Ralphie's just gone. And then he comes back one day, and I'm just stressed to the fucking gills. And Ralph walks into my office and he goes, hey, man, I just got back off the road and I'm looking around here and I notice everybody seems just so fucking fried and stressed. And I was thinking, you know what we should do is take some of that Disney money that ESPN got and go down to an Angel game. We could get like a party bus and some kegs and we go down there.
Yeah,
and
Ralphie,
we all just kind of like relax a little bit. And I go, so you mean to tell me, Ralph, that like you, the guy who's been gone for 3 weeks, is the one who's got to hit the pressure valve a little bit? Huh, Ralph?
He
And Ralphie just pulls his big fistful of weed out of his pocket. No bag or anything, and dumps it on my desk in front of me, goes, oh, shit, criminal. I didn't know it was going to be that way. All right, you take care of that. I'll be back. We'll discuss this idea later.
That's fucking awesome.
That's awesome, dude.
Those were good days.
So then were you were you part of the original Last Comic then?
I came in at the end of the first season, like for the live shows season, to write material for Jay and to help produce the live
finale. So when the
competition
was happening. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. So
did Jay help create that show?
Yeah. Jay and Jay, Peter Engel. I'm not sure who else. Brittany Lovett were the three people who kind of crafted that format. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I remember. I guess it was actually season two because Ralphie had taken second place, I think, to that.
Yep.
Right?
Correct.
And so the second season, he was now hosting. It was the second season because he was hosting the live shows at the Improv, and he also talked very highly about the show and how it saved his life because he paid for a surgery and had lost a bunch of weight.
Mm-hmm.
Was still big, but had lost a bunch of weight.
Yeah.
And I say he was still big only because he was buddies with Kyle Turley. Did you know Kyle?
Oh, yeah.
The Saints. Well, he was Saints. And
Kyle
just remember
broke
him.
A guitar over my back during my sports. Like, not the breakaway guitar.
Yeah, I believe it.
I'm just going to go like this, right? Bam! And I see, you know,
he was the guy that was getting suspended or penalized like, he would throw helmets and shit. Yeah. But there was a time where he clashed with a cornerback on the Ravens, Chris McCallister, and he threw Turley's helmet, and Turley went nuts. Like, mm-hmm. if that's me, I'm getting fined. But anyway, I just remember Lana picked them up. She was driving. It was like a Toyota Camry, an older one. And Ralphie got in the front seat, the passenger seat, and Kyle Turley got in the seat behind him. And that fucking car, I swear to God, tilted. And then still rode out of there like that. I was like,
it's a little Lana dress.
Two-wheeler. For real, Lana weighed nothing next to those two monsters. Oh, yeah. God. Yeah. That's great, man.
Yeah.
I love hearing great things about Ralphie.
Yeah. He was a good guy. I mean, he was Ralphie was like all heart towards comics, man. He just like there's a bit of a similarity with Mitch in kind of a towards the end, like those of us who were sort of the group here, you know, the group that sort of had come out together and had and had like started to work at the other side of this beyond the stand up together, who both of those guys had kind of like taken off on the road and gone, you know what, this is not for me. What's for me is to be out here. And both of them had, you know, legions of adoring fans waiting for them in every town that they went to. Mm-hmm. And so the guys that they were around, it was always, were you guys at Ralphie's memorial at the Improv?
No, I couldn't go.
It was an interesting, weird night because there was a group of guys who were like road dogs now. Who were there to memorialize him, and then guys like myself and Jay and people who were sort of this thing, like it was sort of that realization that, oh shit, like our friend sort of left this part of his life a lot longer ago, because we'd always say stuff to each other in text or on Twitter or whatever. There's a million ways to have a superficial conversation with someone if you want to now.
Sure.
And so it didn't really occur to me that Ralphie's life had really changed incredibly dramatically by the end down a road. But I will say that like those guys like had stories and stuff that sounded like a new evolution of the stuff that we had done with him.
I see.
And so you kind of go, all right, well, I guess that's, you know, like, I don't, you know, we're all lucky to be here for as long as we're here, and everybody's got their shit that they got to go up against.
Especially in this business.
Yeah. And so there's that part that you just go, all right, I think he was happy, and I'm glad that he was happy.
Well, I'll tell you, every time I saw him, you wouldn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You wouldn't know he was going through anything, because he never let you see that in those moments. It was always everything's great and just pure energy and genuineness and a smile. He always made me fucking laugh. I mean, the dude was ice cold, man. He was great.
Yeah.
When I met that dude, I was at Dublin's. You remember Dublin's?
Oh, yeah.
That was the first place I did stand-up. So I saw Ralphie.
Shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Ralphie was on the first show I ever did.
Uh-huh.
And I remember seeing him, thinking he was so funny. And then, like, I would just, like, I didn't know anything about comedy. So I just started going to Dublin's every week because they put me up, you know?
Yeah.
And then, like, it was really early on. And, like, we were over, like, remember that DJ used to be where Crash used to be?
Yeah.
And I was, like, over there, and Ralphie
was that
there.
The DJ's name?
Yeah, Crash. Yeah.
Jay
Davis and DJ
that.
Crash.
Yeah, of course, man.
Yeah.
And I'm standing there, and Ralphie's there, and I was like, oh, hey, man.
You're not going to believe this right now.
DJ Crash! Oh! Bring the ones and twos, huh? And I remember just standing there, and Ralphie was there, and I was like, oh, hey, man. I go, I saw you do stand-up here, you know, and I told him, you do this one joke, man. And I told him, he goes, oh, thanks, man. Thanks, man. He was like super sweet. And then he got on stage, and I go, yeah. Like, I just complimented that joke over and over again. He got on stage, and he started doing jokes, and then he did that joke, and I got like an applause break. He goes, that's for Jay in the back. And then he just went right back in the stand-up, and I was
so
just like,
nice.
Oh, my God. Talking about me again.
Yeah. And like, you know, I didn't know who Ralphie was before I started going to shows. I just didn't know anything about stand up.
Yeah.
And I thought it was the coolest thing. And like that's when, you know, he was like, you're good in my book, bro.
Yeah, no. Ralphie was so good to comics, and he was so like on Last Comic season 3. Season 1 versus season 2. in like
that was season three was one versus two
one versus two yeah which that. Was a which was a terrible terrible mistake
okay maybe
but it did lead to me doing the soup which was exciting but it was there was a day there where there was a day there where Jay and Gary Gulman got into a fight.
I remember hearing about this.
Yeah. Jay
and
just
Gary's
could,
big.
Gary's
dude,
a big
tight end for the fucking Boston College Eagles.
Did he really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Peabody Mass, baby. What's up, G?
Yep. We're all kind of standing around a rehearsal talking, shooting a shit. And all of a sudden, there's like the whole proscenium to the stage was over at CBS Television City is like shaking, going back and forth. And there's boom. And everybody turns and looks. And Gary has Jay like feet off the ground up. And you're always fucking picking on me. Why don't you ever pick on anybody else? Like, you know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm talking
big.
To Alonzo Bowden, who is also a big guy.
Very he's big.
And Alonzo goes, all right, I'll get Jay. You get Gary. Go running over there.
I can see him saying,
like, Alonzo's totally. So fucking fast that he figures that right there. And so, we get them separated, and you know, everybody kind of goes their separate ways. And it was, and like, Jay got sent home, Gary got sent home, and Jay was just freaking out. Like, he was so pissed. And
because I think there was a live show that night at the Improv, and all I kept hearing about was how they had had this this altercation.
So Jay goes back home. Gary's out of there. Ralphie's been up in his dressing room getting high all day.
Of course, yeah.
And so I'm sitting outside talking to Charlie.
The loose pile. Yeah.
I'm sitting outside talking to Charlie. Who
of course we love Charlie. Yes,
and,
Charlie's great.
And all of a sudden, Jay calls, and I pick up the phone, and Jay's just still fuming. He's like, motherfucker. You know, like, who the fuck? I'm the host of the show. You can't. And, you know, and like, Jay's not that way, by the way. Jay is, at the very core of Jay, is a very nice, very caring guy. But he had just gotten picked up off his feet
off
by
his
a large
feet.
Man.
Yeah.
Who ostensibly worked for him. And and so he's just all over the place. All of a sudden, Ralphie comes down from his dressing room. He's walking through the parking lot. And he goes, hey, are you talking to JJ? And I go, yeah. He goes, give me the phone. And I hand him the phone. I go, Ralphie wants to talk to you. And Ralphie got his phone. He goes, you got beat up by a guy in flip-flops.
Oh my god. Was Jay, did that piss you off or did that crack
calm him down? That got him laughing.
Yeah,
that was like the diffusing thing.
Oh, that's so that's why I love comedians. Every angle is something where you could just look. All right, I know this is a serious situation,
yeah.
But I'll get Jay, you get Gary. You didn't want any part of that big motherfucker either. Oh, god. So I want to talk to you about marriage and being a father, because we've had a couple of conversations recently. Actually, we had a conversation. Your daughter is 15?
15 years old, yep.
So take us back to meeting your wife and how you guys met. And I mean, because I really believe this about women who marry comedians and people like us. Mm-hmm. They're special. I mean, they
well, who else is like us?
Yeah.
What do you, I would say entertainers, athletes,
maybe.
People that travel a lot.
Right.
You got to be home,
that,
take care.
Yeah,
broken,
yeah.
Neurotic,
like
chemically
that?
Addicted men.
That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Yes. Dark.
Yeah.
Twisted, fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, here's the interesting thing about my wife. There's plenty of things that are interesting about my wife. Fuck, she's not listening to this.
no, way to cover
the so Leslie, my wife, who is, you know, anybody who knows her knows that she is incredibly tough. She's incredibly smart. She's no bullshit. She's got a good sense of humor, but she'll decide when she's going to use it. You know, is who she is. So she was waiting tables at a restaurant across the Melrose from the Improv.
Okay, when, so you met out here. Not
yeah, we met out here. Yeah,
at Chocolat.
And it was
Mustache
at the time.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we knew each other from hanging out at that bar. Because she would get done with her best friend managed the improv at the time, and so she would hang out there. And, you know, she didn't date comics. That was a big rule. She did not date comics. She very seldom went into the showroom. I was in and out of town, often on the road. And so we were friends and friendly, and there was something there. But you didn't know what it was, and I certainly didn't know what it was. And there's a longer story in which there was a night where there was – so, God, there's a lot of drugs in this fucking show. my roommates and I on, like, Friday, Saturday nights, especially if we didn't have spots but we're going to hang out at the improv anyways, we would play Scrabble, and we would put whatever drugs were on hand on the double and triple word scores. And so if you got a tile on one, you got to – take whatever was there.
Right. I like that.
Yeah, and you know, drinking wine or whatever we could afford that was around. And so we'd hit the improv a little messy. And she was there with a friend on a bachelorette party, and there was a hookup that night. There was a little makeout session happened that night. And the next day, I was standing out in front of the improv the next night, standing out in front of the improv talking to the doorman, Cyrus, who's a friend of mine. And Leslie came walking up. And, you know, the night before, there was a hookup. And so I was like, hey, how you doing? And she just walked right by me and just glared at me. I was like, what the fuck did I do? You know, like in that kind of mode. Years later, like literally 2-3 years later, after we started dating and after, you know, we became more intimate with each other. I went, you know, you act like this is the first time this stuff has happened. And she goes, it is. And I go, no, there was that night. And she goes, no, that was my friend who was the bride-to-be. I was like,
that
oh,
you hooked
shit,
up with?
Yeah. I was like, I thought it was you.
Oh,
so,
my God. So, hey, listen.
It's like I made a mistake.
In my defense.
Yeah. So what are
you
we really?
You really did think it was her. Huh?
Yeah.
Oh,
now you're splitting hairs.
So how long after that did you date her?
The bride
2 years?
Yeah, it was like 2 years.
Oh,
yeah.
Spanking out with the chick supposed to get married.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's like, this piece of shit trash.
Yeah.
Look at him. Bring a home wrecker.
Yep. And so.
God.
And so then we started dating, and it was truly like she did not see me. Of the girlfriends that I had had leading up to her in my and in the years that I'd been a professional comedian, all of them I had met after a show, after they had seen me perform. And Leslie had never seen me perform. And so I think that there's something to that. I actually think that not all of us, like I'm not like a Jekyll and Hyde kind of guy, but certainly the guy on stage, especially back then, is a more crass, a more brash, arrogant individual than the person, you know, who walks around in my skin all day, every day. And so I think that I think the reason that it worked, I think the reason that it stuck, or not, the reason that we were a good fit is actually because she had zero exposure to that asshole.
Right.
And so, what she actually liked about me, you know, what there was to like about her was an abundant, you know, resource just there all the time. What there was to like about me was something that if you were in a showroom, you could find one set of things to like about me, but it's nothing like the guy who's, you know.
Offstage.
Offstage, yeah.
Yeah, she liked the offstage KP.
Yeah, so is that. I'm still a massive fuck-up. I'm just, you know, nicer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So when, how long did you date before you guys got married?
Dated about 2 years. We actually, we dated about 2 months before we moved in together.
That's it?
But we'd known each other for years. So there was that. There was, you know, a lot of familiarity. And
she had recently lost her job.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the mustache changed to whatever the fuck it became.
You know, by then she was working at Le Petit Foie up on Sunset, which I think is still there. But we
just opened one in the Valley.
Ah, they did. That's right. Yeah.
I took my nephew there recently.
Wow.
Very nice.
It was like his, before he went to college, I took him out for like a nice meal and we went there.
Cool. Where do you go to school?
Purdue.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good school.
Engineering.
IUPUI.
Look at that.
Or
my daughter's going to go engineering. That's her.
Oh, really?
That's her thing. Yeah. So we dated for a couple months. We moved in together. We were together for a couple of years after that. And then we got engaged. Wasn't a pretty engagement. Wasn't good.
Why? What did you do or not do?
Well, okay.
How old were you?
I'm sure I could do the math.
Were you writing at that point, or you still?
Oh yeah, I was writing and producing on the X show on FX at the time, and so this is like early 2000. Yeah, so we got married in 2000. So. You know, I'm 49 now.
Cool.
Fucking somebody figure this out. Anybody have a 30-ish. Calculator? Yeah, 30-ish. Yeah.
31.
Cool. Yeah, so we'd been together for a while, and I was leaving work. I had a gig in Catalina, a stand-up gig in Catalina over Memorial Day weekend. And I was leaving work on Friday at Hollywood Center Studios, and I'm walking through the parking lot, and I see this producer who I'm friends with, a promo producer who I'm friends with that I hadn't seen in a while. And she says, "Hey, KP, what's going on? How's things? Blah, blah, blah. How's Leslie?" And I go, "She's great. You know, all's good." And she goes, "Are you guys engaged yet?" And I went, "Ask me Monday." And I don't know why I said that. Yeah. Like, I had no idea. Like, I hadn't thought about it. It wasn't something that – there was no pre-planned, like, anything.
Yeah.
And I got in the car, and I was driving – to pick her up to go down to Long Beach to get on the ferry to go to Catalina. And I was like, I wonder why I said that. I was like, I guess I'm going to get engaged this weekend. So you got to go through Beverly Hills on the way.
Yeah.
So I stopped off in Beverly Hills and bought the cheapest, shittiest ring I could find, presuming that we would exchange it for something she liked better after we were not near sand.
Mm-hmm.
Near
and oceans.
Yeah, right.
Stuff like that. I hear about this fucking ring every, like, we're three rings past that ring, and I still hear about this goddamn ring every time we bring it. Last weekend, I heard about the fucking ring that has not been in her possession for 18 years.
That ring is gone?
That ring is gone. That ring was returned, like when we got back. Like, Tuesday, we went there and returned it for something equally as cheap, but more to her liking. And so I buy this ring. And we get in the car, and we're driving down to Long Beach, and we're on the 405, and we're in holiday traffic, and we're just sitting there. And I think to myself, so I guess you're going to do this. You're gonna propose. But I'm like, and she's going to say yes, because we've been together this long. Like, she's going to say yes. But if she says no, then you're stuck on a fucking island with this woman for three more days.
And a ferry ride.
Yeah.
Those can be tough, man. Those can be tough.
And so I was like, I should probably try to figure out if this is going to work, if this is going to break my way. You know, so we're standing on line for the ferry, and we're standing, and it's like the rope line. Leslie has on like a wife beater t-shirt. She's carrying a duffel bag. She's got a cigarette hanging out of her mouth. She's got next to no makeup or no makeup on, which is a big deal for her.
It's a longshoreman.
We're standing. Yeah, she's about to take to sea.
Yeah.
And we're standing there, and I go, so things are good, right? And she's like, yeah. I go, what's next? And she goes, what do you mean, what's next? I go, what's next? Things are good. What's next? And she goes, well, we probably could get a new couch in the living room.
Oh, like, my God.
Right, that's where she's at. Right,
yeah,
here.
Her mind's just nowhere furniture. Near. Right. Yeah,
and this is me and my wife, P.S.
Yeah,
insane.
Yeah, and I go, yeah, I mean, yeah, that'd be nice. But, I mean, what else? What else? And she goes, I mean, actually, I'd like curtains. I'd like to redo the whole living room if we can ever afford it. You know, and I was like, yeah, no, I mean, like, what's next? And she goes, well, I mean, it would be nice ultimately.
Like,
yeah. And she's, every answer is just getting further and further away. And right. I like, we're about at the point
tire
where she's gonna go, yeah,
that
yeah, yeah, we're about at the point where she's gonna go, like, we're out of milk. And I was fucking, and so finally I go, no, me, you, big, now I'm pissed.
Yeah.
I'm like, me, you, big picture, our lives together, things are good, what's next? And she goes, what are you talking about, like a ring or something? And I go, yes. And she goes, well, yeah, sure, but, you know, whenever. And like something in that just pissed me off to no end. So
are you in the car right now?
No, we're on the line for a fucking boat.
The ferry.
Right, now
yeah.
You're over there.
Are you on the ferry or are you still in that line?
No, we're still in line.
Okay, he's in
where
line.
Everyone's yeah. listening. Right. I mean, everyone can hear what's going on here.
So I whip out the ring and pop it home and go, how about now? And she looks at this shitty little ring and she looks at me and she's like, are you fucking kidding me? And I go, why would I be fucking kidding if I was holding a fucking ring in my hand? Like, how's that kidding? And she goes, well, God, yes, but Jesus. And that was it.
These people are like, I don't know about this couple. Right?
No, people said no fucking way. Yeah. You proved everybody wrong.
Oh, yep. My God. Yep. And you've been together 18 years?
18 years we've been married.
Wow,
yeah.
That's awesome.
Yep.
And you have one daughter.
One daughter, right? Sophia, yep.
See, and she's 15, she's you 15, said. My yep. daughter's going to be 4 in a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm already... You know, first of all, I don't want the time to go by because I know mm-hmm. it goes by. I can't believe 4 years have already gone
yeah.
by.
Yeah.
And I am a single father. So mm-hmm. I've got this book that Andrea Savage, was it Andrea that
yeah.
recommended that book to us? She had the TBS show,
Andrea,
our true TV show.
Andrea, was at my wedding.
Was she?
Yes, she was.
I love
yeah.
her. Yep. She, it's The Keeping and Caring of You is what it's called, and it's mm-hmm. it's to teach young girls mm-hmm. that are becoming women
yeah.
Like she told us this story about, like, I didn't know this, and she said she didn't either at that age. But I guess when you start to develop boobs, they're super painful. And she didn't know what the fuck. So she got these books for her daughter to help her.
Yeah.
And I know you say, you know, 15's just, God. I just think of what's going on as a boy and try to transfer that to a girl. And I'm like, oh, my fucking God.
It is. I mean, it's like, and also my daughter's like, are like very, you know, brilliantly, delightfully, wonderfully nerdy. And she's like very big into math and science. And she's very big into,
That something at the convention center, didn't she have something in, or some display? She went.
Well, she's robotics. She's big in robotics. Yeah, yeah, her team was like eighth in the world. Yeah, she builds
in the world.
Like, yeah, last
Holy
2 years ago. Yeah,
shit.
Yeah.
And, right, there's 9 teams in the world.
Yeah. Hey, so like, did you guys introduce her to that, or did she find her way into
it? She found her way. Like, this kid, like, literally got out of the crib and started putting blocks together. Yeah. It's just who she is. Like that, that's cool. That's the thing. Is like, here's what I figured out over the years is that there's this consistency of character that, and it's wonderful. It actually helps me not get freaked out over the fact that time is flying by so much, because when I talk to her, when I get home tonight and have a conversation with her, I genuinely feel like I'm having a conversation with, you know, a more well-rounded, better, you know, better communicator, but ultimately the same person as the one who started talking to me all those years
ago. That's cool.
You know, mm-hmm. and there's something about that. No, you feel that way? It's like,
we can see in both my son and my daughter, their personality now is exactly like
exactly.
The first time he smiled. You're like, oh, yeah, that's the same dude.
Yeah.
And that psychopath daughter of ours, the same chick.
So my kid does not want to talk about she's getting better at it. As she's getting older, she's getting more kind of like comfortable with talking about the things that are more, you know, just, and it's not just feminine stuff. It's anything. Like if my wife will go talk about her hair, her skin, whatever else, it's just, you know, fingers in the air. No, I'm not like, I don't want
math, science,
Math, science. Like, you can be smart. You don't have to be pretty. And my wife is like, but you can be both. You're so pretty. and they go through this thing. And so like the bra thing, that was a time we're a year or so past it. But there was a time like my wife was going crazy where she was really just like, you know, she needs to start wearing a bra, and she will not have the conversation with me because it's talking about her and it's talking about her body and she doesn't want to talk about it. And I was like, let me give it a shot. And she's like, no. I was like, no, I got an idea here. I got an idea. Let me try it. And so
you walk in, you're like, are we good?
Yeah. Well, so I'm sitting watching TV one night. I don't even look at her. She comes through the room, not even looking at her. I go, hey, looks like it's about time for you to start wearing a bra. Bam, next day wearing a bra, because she does not want, if she doesn't
right,
want
to have that you conversation, don't want to talk to
she does not want to have that conversation with me at all. So I pushed it and I won.
That's all you had to say.
But then later, as other things started happening, and my wife, same thing, like, it's going to happen. She's going to get it, and she's going to be on like a class trip, or she's going to be in class, and it's going to be a thing, and she's going to be embarrassed, and she won't talk to me about it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, let me take a swing. And so we're driving in the car to school one morning, just she and I, and we're driving. We're listening to our 93.7 jam. I turn it down, and I just go, tampons. If you never want to hear me say that word again, you'll talk to your mom tonight. I didn't look at her. I kept my eyes on the road, hands at 10 and 2. Yeah, and she just went, yes, yes, I will.
Okay,
and I was like, good.
I thought the mom. Yeah. That's awesome.
That's it.
That's amazing.
Oh, my God. You know what? I'm going to use that shit.
Yep. Get you off the hook.
Yeah, no girl's going to want to sit and talk to you about that. Like, all right.
Yes.
No.
Mom. No.
Well, we're at that time, KP, man. This has been so much fun. Thank you for coming on here.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Let's promote here Norm Show for sure.
Yep.
Binge Joel McHale. They're all there now.
Kevin Hart, Lift Legend, produced by the brilliant Ryan Seacrest.
Thank you very much.
Available now.
Seacrest.
Did I just say that?
You did.
Because you said Joel, and I went to a place. Jesus Christ. Produced by the brilliant Ryan Sickler. That one stays in.
No, Ryan Seacrest did that.
Yeah. No, Ryan did a great job with this season of Kevin's show.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you for letting me.
Thanks
on
for
that,
doing
man.
It, brother.
Fuck yeah.
And did I really like I said, fucking say Seacrest?
You did.
Wow. Wow.
I just thought you were fucking with
me. I did too.
Yeah, no, I was like,
any 2 week gigs you have, bro, hit me up. You got the best 2 week gigs in the biz. That shit lasts like 15 weeks.
Yes, it does.
Thank you so much for coming on. If there's anything you want to say otherwise.
No, thank you guys. I love the Crab Feast. Please keep doing it. Please.
All right.
You got it, man. Yeah. Thanks for coming on. As always, awesome. JLarsonComedy.com, JLarsonComedy on all social media.
RyanSickler.com, RyanSickler on all social media. We'll talk to you all next Tuesday.